Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 109 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli. And whew, hopefully the pod's going to be as spirited as last night in the National Hockey League. Lots going on. You got Point and Letang. Tanner Janot, he outlined it for us on Monday, Frank, who he was going to take in a Royal Rumble amongst all his Moose Jaw Warrior teammates. And he goes Point because he'll just snap. And obviously you saw Point and Letang last night. Nathan MacKinnon loses his marbles with a few seconds left after Dyson Mayo gives him a stick right in the face. There's lots going on last night. Some big wins for some teams, some tough losses. And that's how it's going to be here down the stretch. I'm pretty excited. There's actually a playoff race in the Western Conference heating up.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what it felt like. It's like the calendar turned to March and the players, you know, recognize the position they're in the standings. Maybe not so much in the East, but, you know, love to see the response from the Pittsburgh Penguins and then to see what the Tampa Bay Lightning said afterwards. They basically said, and I'm paraphrasing Pat Maroon's quote, but he said after the game when the Lightning lost 5-1, he goes, "They did to us tonight what we've done to most teams all year." So an indication of, you know, sort of where things are at with the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're back on track and things heating up in the West. By the way, had to ask you, is Dyson Mayo one of the most underrated hockey names in a while?
Oh, it's pretty sweet, man.
Dyson, D-Y-S-I-N. I'd love to know how they came up with that.
And he also just signed a 3-year contract extension, the former Edmonton Oil King with the Arizona Coyotes. And you see, he stuck MacKinnon. Now, obviously, it was accidental, but still, I could get why Nate MacKinnon lost his marbles. It's 3-1. The game's over. There's, 5 seconds left? And right off the face-off, you go to lift his stick and hit him right in the face, and he's leaking all over, and then they throw the mitts down. I kind of like that from Colorado. I think that's a team that's got to play with a little bit more nastiness at times. And, you know, obviously they're running away with the Western Conference, but I think MacKinnon showing his teammates that we can't take losing for granted.
Well, we've learned that it doesn't exactly take a lot for Nathan MacKinnon to begin to lose his marbles. I mean, that fuse is relatively short compared to some others in the National Hockey League. So, I get it too, but I don't know. At the same time, like, things happen. Like, was he purposely trying to stick him in the face off the draw?
I don't think so, but
I mean, look, that happens relatively. How many high sticks a game do we get where someone gets poked in the face? A lot, like two per game. I don't know, something like that. It's a lot.
You think it's that many?
I mean, I feel like every game I watch at some point, somebody's checking their face for something, like whether it's Connor McDavid last week or, it was a couple weeks back that Austin Matthews had his run in with the post. That was a little different. But at some point, some game, I feel like we're dealing with at least one high stick per game.
Yeah, maybe it's the timing. Maybe it's the frustration. I didn't watch the entire game, so I don't know if that was something leading up to that. Like, you saw Chychrun at the same time, Chychrun snapping on Landeskog in front of the net. So, you know, hey, good for Arizona, Frank. They have not rolled over. They've actually, they've beaten some good teams lately, the Coyotes. So I'll give them credit. There's no free spaces on the bingo card at any point in the National Hockey League. We see upset wins. You saw Buffalo absolutely trounce Toronto a few days ago. So that the final few months, I always thought it was kind of funny when teams, like, there was teams know who's bad, and they, well, you know, geez, they got a lot of good players. Well, no, they don't have a lot of good players. Otherwise, they wouldn't be that terrible. And so you don't see that as much anymore, kind of the backhanded compliment about, oh, they got a really good players and we got to respect them, yada, yada. Like, we know which
I love when coaches good. Say that's a really good team over there. Oh. Like, they're 29th in the league. What do you mean they're really good?
Yeah, I can't stand it. So, but, you know, you look at the you say there's no race in the East. You're right for no playoff spots. But the seeding in the East, Frank, and I just want to point it out again. Here we are. It's March 4th.
Are you doing it by points percentage? Hopefully. Please say yes.
You can do it either one you want, because the game's played now is so close. You can go points percentage or you can go points. And right now, Carolina's number one, Washington's number eight. So they're going to stay in their division. Thank you. The NHL has 2 months to make one simple amendment, because the last thing.
Not happening.
Yeah, but it should. It makes no sense. You're going to have, we've known which four teams are going to make it from each division. Why would you have Carolina play Boston or Toronto? It makes no sense. If you want to talk rivalries, why would you do that?
Look, it makes me a little bit sick to my stomach to agree with you, but I was singing your praises yesterday on Vancouver radio, saying the same exact thing, that if there are 4-4, there can't be a crossover.
100%. Yeah. Frank, speaking of Toronto, there's some teams with goaltending issues. What do you think Toronto does with Campbell and Mrazek right now? A lot of people in Toronto feel like for Jack Campbell, it's more so between the ears than it is his talent level, but it's 3 months of sub 900.
Yeah, we're approaching exactly 3 months, December 7th, 890 save percentage since then. And I think, you know, there's no question that it's alarming. I think they're trying to use every available opportunity to evaluate between now and March 21st, hoping that one of these guys can find their game. I mean, you give Jack Campbell a few days off to get his head right, and Peter Mrazek doesn't look any better. They're 31st in the league in save percentage since December 1st. And this trend has gone on for so long, but hasn't really become a topic of conversation until the last 2 weeks or so, partly because they've found a way to outscore and paper over a lot of their mistakes. So Jack Campbell, with all that going on, has a winning record by a wide margin. You know, it's hard to do when you're allowing that many goals. But it goes to show you that Toronto can really score. And so the issue is, when you get to the playoffs, you typically can't outscore your mistakes. So the other part of it is Jack Campbell allowing a lot, or is Peter Mrazek allowing a lot because of their own goaltending, or is it because of some of the weaknesses and flaws that exist on this defense? So if you beef up your blue line, does that make your goaltending better?
Well, your beef up your blue line or play maybe a better system and have the players do it. You know, some would argue that under Jay Woodcroft and Edmonton for 11 games, albeit small sample size alert, that has worked. I still, I wonder at some point your goalies have to be able to make big saves. No defensive team ever, like Tampa Bay's won 2 Stanley Cups. They still relied on one of the best goalies to make great saves at key times, right? That's just, I don't know if you can ever have that stifling of a defensive system nowadays that you can shelter your goaltender, but you're right. Maybe you can play a little bit better, Frank. I think that's valid. And so that's something they'll have to look at, but it's interesting to me because I just don't, we know Braden Holtby, but And I still wonder about Dallas. Like, I know people say, well, they could bring up Hudobin, right? And Jake Ottinger is their guy. But what if they truly believe Holtby's better and they're in such a playoff run that those 10 starts down the stretch that they think they're going to get to Holtby or eight or whatever it is, do they really want to go to a guy who's their third stringer just to get a second round pick or whatever they're going to get for Braden Holtby? So I'm kind of curious to see what Jim Neal does, because I know there's Marc-Andre Fleury, right? But other than that, like, I'm not, unless unless the Islanders are going to make a hockey trade and they want to move Varlamov, who has a year left on his contract, I just don't see a lot of goalies, Frank. Like, people have been talking about it, but I don't see it. Do you see anyone else as a realistic option on who would be an upgrade? Like, there's some goalies you could acquire, but like, James Reimer's banged up now, but I'm not sure James Reimer's a guaranteed upgrade for Edmonton or Toronto, or, you know, maybe Vegas is Robin Leonard's out, I guess, because their only option is Lauren Brossoit at this point.
That's the problem that's faced the Oilers for a long time. I think they look to make a goaltending change and haven't really found someone that they think can be a guaranteed difference maker. And I don't know what the answer is. Like, what would Marc-Andre Fleury look like in Toronto? That's really, I think, the question. And what would it cost to get him? How would you make the money work? I mean, that's the only guy I could see as a reasonable upgrade. And the question is, would he want to go there? I think to this point, the answer is no on Edmonton. I think the answer is no on Washington. Would he want to go to Toronto? That's the question.
Yeah. And I'll say this, Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine, he talked a lot about Fleury, and Fleury plays better in a system where he gets a lot of shots. So that might fit in well in Toronto, but you know, you're right. Does he want to go there? You know, obviously it's a huge cap hit. So how do you make it
work? Huge pressure. Do you want to sign up for that? I mean, that's the question everyone has to ask themselves, I guess, if you're going there.
Yeah. Fleury's personality, he would seem like a guy who, you know, he seems pretty laid back and, you know, jokester and a prankster. I think if like, maybe he might relish that opportunity, you know,
maybe.
Yeah. He'd be one of those guys that, yeah, I think I can have, 'cause I'll tell you right now, if you go to Toronto and you win, you are a folklore legend.
Yes.
Forever. Right? Like, ever. So there is that side of it too.
55 years? I mean, it's a long time.
Yeah. And if I was wagering right now, Frank, and it's an easy wager because there's 15 other teams, I would take the field to win over Toronto for sure. So the only team I might take against the field right now is Colorado. That's the only team. I don't think I'd take any other team in the East against
that's fair.
The field. No.
So, but just going back to Toronto though, like, could you imagine the situation that unfolds if they don't go out and get a goalie? They have this roster that they feel is ready for playoff success, has another great regular season, and the position that they hadn't really thought was a problem all year long until the last little while is the one that ends up coming back to bite them. Could you imagine if that's what unfolds? Like, how? Why? I mean, it'd be unbelievable. It'd be peak Leafs, really.
Well, it shows you how challenging it can be. And that's why, like, really, when we go through the list, how many goalies can you say at the start of the year that you're very confident you know what you're going to get from them? Right? Like, it's such a difficult position. Like, because you can
maybe
have
seven guys.
Yeah.
Seven guys.
Because you can have forwards, Frank, who might be, you know, 90-point guys, 3-4 years, and then they have an off year and they score 70 points or whatever, but it gets hidden, right? Like, it doesn't crush you. Whereas if your goalie suddenly has a 9-10 or a 9-08 and whatever happens, maybe he's got a little tweak and he's trying to play through it, they're so much more exposed, right? And that's why it's such a difficult one. But I would agree with you. There's I'm not sure there's 10 goalies you can say confidently.
I'm not even sure there's seven. Yeah. Honestly, I'm going through the list right now. So it's like Vasilevsky. You can probably include Shesterkin in that category because he's done it consistently for a number of years. Thatcher Demko, UC Saros,
Hellebuck,
Connor Hellebuck, John Gibson, And that's pretty much it.
Now, what about Fred? Would Freddie Anderson be just on the cusp of that?
Not really. I mean, if he was, then they would have kept him.
Right.
The issue with Anderson has been injury.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, the other guy had 24 games last year at 895. Like that. Yeah. That's not a year where you, that's exactly what we're talking about. This year to year swoon between, you know, really good years and bad years for goalies.
What about Bobrovsky? He had two down years, right?
Yeah. Two down years in a row after a sustained run as being in that category.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's tough, man. Like it's, you know, we could even go for forwards, but there's probably, when I think about it, the same amount of forwards that you say, hey, you know, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl right now, you know, Austin Matthews is pretty consistent in what he does, misses a few games, but you know, Patrick Kane for the longest time, he's getting a little bit older now. It's hard, man. Like it is hard to be elite, but the goaltending position is just so much more noticeable if you're off.
Did I say Jacob Markstrom? Because he should be in that category.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, look at his numbers last year in Calgary. Well, obviously a 1 year blip, but even Markstrom, who I agree with you, has been excellent, had kind of an off year.
I mean, it's just hard to do. It's not just individual. It's also team dependent.
Yeah. Yeah. A connection. So like it'll be fascinating to see what comes here in the next 17 days leading up to the NHL trade deadline. Does Marc-Andre Fleury move?
And, I don't know how Toronto could possibly go into the playoffs at this point, given what we see right now. Maybe someone writes themselves, Jack Campbell or Peter Mrazek, one of them steps up to grab the crease. Short of that, I don't know how they could go to the deadline and not address the position.
Well, that's fair. Another guy, Frank, we might put in that list is Sorokin in New York. He's young.
He's getting close.
He's getting close there for sure. And that's why if you're the New York Islanders, Varlamov, you have to think has big value for a team because you would have two playoff runs with him, right? Yeah. It's kind of like a position of the Barkley Goudreau Coleman trade where you get a guy for 2 years.
But just think about this list and think about how many guys used to be on this list that are no longer.
Yeah. Well, Carey Price, right?
Jonathan Quick. I mean, like, yes, some of those guys have gotten a little bit older, but Braden Holtby once upon a time was on that list. And, you know, there's tons of guys that have been in that group that just haven't been able to really do it. You fall off. Martin Jones was on that list for a little bit. It happens.
Oh, well, yeah, fell off the cliff in San Jose, three straight years of 896. That was kind of freaky to watch. Moving, Frank, to guys who are doing it, how long before Marty St. Louis loses the interim tag, do you think, in Montreal? He's got the Habs competing, man. They just beat the Flames.
Yeah, they're rolling. I love the energy that he has. I love the different outlook. I love his confidence. He just seems to really enjoy it. And I think that infectious energy bring something to a team. Remember we were talking about the Montreal Canadiens and how this was a no risk signing, no risk hire.
Yeah.
Well, the risk is that you end up passing a team like Buffalo over these last 27 games. And you put yourself in a spot where you're decreasing the amount of ping pong balls you have. You pass Seattle, you pass, you know, get well ahead of Arizona. Like they were the 32nd team in the league for a while based on points percentage. And now they're quickly kind of sliding up the board. And that's really the only risk for the Canadians. But I guess if the answer is in the lottery being a crapshoot as it is anyway, you're better or happier that you're finding your coach, especially in a year where there's already some disagreement in terms of who that top pick is. And not only that, but agreement in the sense with Shane Wright that he's not going to be a franchise changing player.
And speaking of interim tags, Frank, Davidson lost his in Chicago. He is now the GM. And when you look at the Blackhawks, they currently don't have their first round pick unless they win the lottery and it's number one or two, right? It's top two protected. So, you know, they'd have to win the lottery to get in there. And when I look at Chicago, you've got Calvin DeHaan, you got Fleury. Do you think he's going to push even harder to make a trade because he wants to get a first rounder? Is there still in a rebuild?
still, they're just starting. I mean, he flat out came out and said in his introductory press conference this week, we are rebuilding, and had a conversation with the top players on the team to kick off the week, you know, to kick off his introductory press conference saying, hey, just letting you know that, you know, I'm coming out and letting everyone know publicly that we're going to rebuild, and wanted to just make sure I told you guys before I said it. And I think something like that, that message goes a long way. But I think that also puts just about everyone on the team on alert that, you know, aside from maybe Patrick Kane or Jonathan Taves or Seth Jones, I'd put Kirby Dach in that category. I think the Blackhawks absolutely love Kirby Dach, and he's going to be a big part of what they're building. Everyone else is up for grabs. Like if someone is hitting the asking price for Brandon Hagel, he's moving. If someone hits the asking price, maybe not now, he's available, but maybe in the summer, Alex DeBrincat, he's moving. Like they're going to begin tearing this down piece by piece, and it's going to start between now and March 21st. It's not just going to be about moving Calvin DeHaan. It's not just going to be about moving Marc-Andre Fleury. They're going to begin these conversations in earnest to try and make changes.
Would it be a spoiler alert to say that they've probably been in a rebuild a little bit longer than now finally publicly acknowledging it?
Right? I think it's unfair to say that because they were ramping up that last summer. Think about the moves that they made to try and get better. They traded for Tyler Johnson, even though it was part of a salary cap dump. They made that whopper of a trade. What rebuilding team trades their first round pick? They were not rebuilding last summer. They were ramping up to be a competitive team again, and now they're going to tear it down. I think that's inaccurate.
Well, no, my point was, Frank, they might have thought that they were still, I think they might have overrated some of the abilities they had on their roster, and adding Seth Jones is great. But
they traded for a $7 million goalie. I know they didn't give up anything.
They gave up nothing, right?
It doesn't matter. You're taking on a $7 million goalie.
Yeah.
Oh no. Because and you convinced the $7 million goalie that was contemplating retirement to come to your team because you thought that there was a chance that you could be a playoff team this year.
Yeah. Oh, no,
that's not a rebuilding team. They haven't acted like a rebuilding team.
Yeah, but they've also missed them. This will be 5 years that they, although I know that there's the bubble lockout when they were whatever it was, the 23rd team, where they wouldn't have been a playoff team. So that's a little bit of an asterisk, but this will be 5 years that they, you know, would have finished outside of the top, 20 teams in the standings. So the DeBrincat one's fascinating to me because the guy can score. And he's got 1 year left, but I understand if you now tell your organization you're going into a rebuild, the challenge of doing the rebuild, Frank, is how do you, because if you just go with all young guys, they just get their face kicked in for years, like a Kirby Dach, for instance, right? You want Kirby Dach to at least have some competitive, you know, years where the team's not out of it in January, right? Like that can wear on guys. So that it's a fine line. I know it's hard to do, but like to me, I would look and say, hey, if I'm going to pay Alex DeBrincat $7 or $8 million, like Jonathan Taves, when his contract's over, whatever his new contract is, it's not going to be $10.5 million. I'm not, you know, who knows how long he'll play. He's had some health issues, but
he feels like a guy with his comments this week that maybe has only 1 year left in his career.
Yeah. So there's $10.5 million, right? That frees up a lot of money. So even if
they already have a lot of money, they only have, $58 million committed to next year's cap.
Yeah, like trading DeBrincat
already
to me
have
doesn't make sense.
Bonanza of dollars to spend. But DeBrincat is also due a $9 million qualifying offer after next season. So if your team's rebuilding isn't the best way to do it, to trade off the pieces that have real value,
But the problem
that's what
with
you
that
have
is,
to do. You have a lack of talent on your team. That's really the truth of what the Chicago Blackhawks are facing. The talent gap between themselves and the other teams in the Central Division is large.
I agree. But then trading off some of your most talented guys for futures just widens that gap, doesn't it?
But that's the point, is they're not trying to be good now. They're trying to be good 5 years from now.
Yeah. I'd love to see what they get for DeBrincat, because the odds of what they receive for DeBrincat ending up being better in 5 years, I bet you are lower than what DeBrincat would be over the next 5 years on the team. And even if you have to qualify him at $9 million, Frank, for argument's sake, that's John. So that's 2.6 more than what you're paying him now, but you're getting 10.5 from Taves off the cap, and they've got tons of cap space.
There's no question that they can afford it. That's not the question. The question is, in 5 years, when they want to be really good and start being good, Alex DeBrincat will be 29 years old.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. But in between now and then, you could have gotten a guy that's 18, that's 23 by then.
No. And will he be as good, though, as DeBrincat? That's what I always say.
You got to get multiple pieces then to give yourself shots to get that player. Yeah. I mean, DeBrincat was a 39th overall pick in the second round. Those guys exist. Like, you can find them.
Yeah, no, it's true. They're rare, though. I'll say we'll revisit this, and if they do deal Alex DeBrincat, having seen it so many times, I study these teams who build, and the biggest mistake is they trade away proven players for hope, and rarely does the hope pan out. That's all I'm saying. It's rare.
It takes, I think I'm leaning more towards your assessment from a few weeks back that it takes 8 years.
Yeah, I know. And that's the tough
part. But I think the only way to speed it up is to totally go scorched earth theory and just blow the entire thing up.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hawks fans can't feel sorry for them because they won 3 Stanley Cups in 6 years. Yeah, I mean,
that's the thing. What's there to complain about?
Yeah, but it is also
they're languishing now. They're in no man's land.
Oh yeah, no, that's the worst part. You'd rather either be terrible, because drafting, you know, 9th to 15th. Historically, the odds are lower. You can still get guys there.
What's exciting about what they have now?
Yeah, it's much lower. And right now, they probably don't even have their first round pick. So that's why I think he's going to push hard to try to get something done before the draft, for sure. Just because he wants, you're right, if they admit they're in a rebuild and they don't even have a first rounder, man, that just extends the rebuild another season past it. So
why you need to get as many as you can now.
Lastly, quick, Frank, Colorado. What do you think they're going to do? Are they good enough right now, or do they need to add?
I think they're good enough right now. I don't like. Show me where there's a hole. I mean, you've mentioned size on the back end.
Yes.
Obviously, having Eric Johnson for a playoff run changes that's it a huge little bit.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't see holes here, but I think there's real risk in a team that's been cruising right along to add in a piece that takes away someone else's role and then adds pressure to that new player to contribute. I don't know. I'm in the minority probably in that, because I think everyone wants to try and add and try and improve their team. When you're in a spot like this and you have a true authentic shot at a Stanley Cup, I mean, what would we peg their chances at the moment?
Oh, 20%? They're the favorite.
One in five.
They're the favorite because they don't have as many high quality teams in the West as the East teams do.
It's still just such a crapshoot. Like, I don't know. They also don't have a first round pick. So if they're trading a first round pick, it's in 2023. Not that that matters, but it's, you know, just another
pretty good draft.
Have one. That's what I mean. It's I don't know. I personally don't think this team needs to do anything.
Okay.
You?
I think, they got to add a defenseman, and I think they will. I think they'll add a defenseman, and that can be, it doesn't have to be the biggest name defenseman. They just need someone who's a big, strong, good defender. I think good teams need 8 of them sometimes in the postseason. And
so give me your prototype, your ideal.
I think Ben Sherratt helps them.
Okay. Is Ben Sherratt worth a first and a third?
That's a good question. Well, their first rounder is going to be so late. Considering I'm going to say yes, if, well, obviously it's hindsight, but I would say yes, because I think their opportunity to win, they got 2 years, right? They got two great runs because of McKinnon's contract. And then it changes a bit. You know, he's still a good player, but he's going to be getting paid way more. So I think these next 2 years, if I look at a team, if Chicago's a team that has to go full scorched earth, I think Colorado's got to be a team that pushes their chips in. And I would push my chips in now for two playoff runs if I'm Colorado.
Okay.
So I would go Bencherot for a first and a third. I know that's a lot. No.
Well, that's what they've been asking for weeks now, and they haven't gotten it.
So. Yeah, so they might not get that, right?
Well, I think it's a buyer's market this year. Like, if you look at it,
I would agree.
The number of playoff teams that are already solidified, you're not, there aren't any teams that are trying to add that are knocking on the door. Most of the teams that are right sort of in that mix are probably not going to be big buyers. Then you've got other teams that are in the mix that aren't likely to be big buyers, like a Pittsburgh. Calgary's already done their shopping.
Yeah.
Washington, a lot of the teams, their GM Brian McClellan came out this week and said he's not going to be aggressive. That's three teams right there that you can pretty much take off the board. I think Tampa is lurking, but they are so capped out that I don't know that they could do anything if they wanted to.
Yeah. Minnesota is the other one, Frank, I'm a little curious about, because, you know, they got just the brutal dead cap space starting for the next three seasons.
But that isn't that a reason to get a rental then now?
No, that's what I mean. I agree with you. I think Minnesota's a team I would put in that could be lurking and making a move, just because they know that.
Well, they're not lurking. I think they're a part of the group that's buying. It's Colorado, Carolina, Florida, Toronto, Rangers, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Boston. That's it. That's a small group.
Now, what about, Vegas, the health of Lehner, and then even, I still think Edmonton would like to tweak something. I don't think Edmonton.
But they're not big buyers. I don't think. For Edmonton, it's probably goaltending. And if not, it's a defenseman that is, we're not talking top four guy.
Yeah.
Actually, Ken Holland has said that he doesn't, you know, this team hasn't necessarily, he knows when to buy, and this team to this point hasn't shown that they're worthy of it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I still think Edmonton, I wouldn't be shocked if they don't get the goalie or defenseman. I wouldn't be surprised for them to try to add some skilled size in their bottom six still. Like, if they're going to battle a Calgary team, I think they need that.
Okay.
Or Vegas.
But they're, would you call them a big buyer? Like a clear?
No, they don't have much cap space either, right? That's the other thing. They're pretty much LTIR. So
those are the teams: Colorado, Carolina, Florida, Toronto, the Rangers, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Boston. That's eight teams.
And so that's
why we usually have a lot more than that are in the mix to really be movers and shakers at the deadline.
Yeah. And I think the list you just made, Frank, to me, it's why if I'm Carolina, I'm pushing in even more. Majority of those teams are in the East. So you amp up your team. You've already got the best team in the West. Now you could augment it and, you know, give yourself maybe juggernaut status.
You meant Colorado, right?
Yeah.
You said Carolina.
Sorry. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Colorado.
Okay. So what do you make of the Claude Giroux addition or talk in Colorado?
Yeah. I don't know if that's their main priority, to be honest. Like, I think Claude Giroux is a good player and would help you, but what I see in kick Colorado can score with anybody. I don't see scoring as their big issue. So I think they need to solidify their back end first, but that's just me.
They've got the second most goals in the league, second only to Florida. They're the one of only two teams with 200 plus to this point. So,
oh yeah, they can score, man.
Yeah.
Like, they got a lot of boards.
Well, but, and I think if you're Claude Giroux, you're sitting there and you're sizing up your options and you say, well, yes, Colorado might be the best chance to win. It's also maybe the best chance to be a misfit on that team. Is it not? Like, if you're Claude Giroux and you're trying to pick your spot of where you're heading to chase a cup, you don't really want to be a guy that gets there and ends up on the third line and isn't used properly, do you? Isn't that a real possibility there more than anywhere else?
Well, yeah, right, because they have pretty deep top six. But maybe Giroux looks and says, hey, like, we say that, but then you look at how important Tampa Bay's third line was to their two championships. And maybe he sees that and says, hey, if I make their third line that good, or maybe they move someone from their top six to their third line, you know, that it does give them, you know, it would add to it, but he's a huge cap hit. I think they got to have a third team for them to even fit him in.
There's a lot of third teams that have lined up this year to do that, that have made it really clear. Seattle, Ron Francis said again this week, we've let everyone know we're ready and willing to do it. New Jersey, Columbus, Detroit, Arizona, San Jose. There's a lot of teams that are saying, funnel your money through us. I'd imagine Buffalo's in the mix. You know, that's a lot of help out there. And you know what's cool about that is, Jason, it's like shopping for a house. You go in and get the best rate. Shopping for a mortgage.
Yeah.
You know, you say, hey, I'll trade you, you know, you retain this much, and you pit the teams against each other instead of just dealing with someone that you like in order to get the best deal for your team and have the most cap hit for the least amount of asset or the least asset cost or price, if that makes any sense.
No, it's funny that there might be more retainers than there are buyers. So that's
interesting. I think there's like an even, like that goes to that alone right there, what you said shows that it's a buyer's market.
Yeah. No. And hey, real estate in Edmonton right now is definitely a seller's market, Frank. Houses, whatever they're listing, they're all going above list price because there's not on the market. So yeah, we'll see if somebody can get better value for what they're trying to sell here in the next 17 days. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk. TY, how you doing?
Yeah, you don't need to tell me how insane the housing market is here in Edmonton. It's just, if you're trying to buy your first house right now, it is just stupid out there, Frank.
Get in, man. It's only going to go up.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, let's get into it. Buy or sell presented by our friends over at DoorDash. Promo code Rundown DD gets you 25% off and no delivery fees on your first order. Last year, in the 3 weeks leading up to the NHL trade deadline and including the deadline itself, we had 35 trades. Buy or sell on there being more than that this year, Frank?
Sell.
Easy sell. Wow.
Yeah, I'm going sell too. That's 35. Wow, that's a lot.
It includes
like the little the tiny mice nuts trades that happen at 2:47 on deadline day involving some minor league guys. I just, for some of the reasons we outlined, some of the other guys that are, so we have 35 names on our trade targets board. And some of those guys are longer term, big picture things that probably, you know, frankly, won't materialize, but are being talked about.
And Jay, you're taking the sell too.
I'm selling because I love transaction. I get the human side. I understand it's hard on players and family, so I don't want to downplay that. But from a fan of the game, I just like to see the transactions. It gives you so much to talk about and dissect and analyze to see, you know, which trade's going to work out for the player and stuff. But sadly, I will also sell.
There are a total of 5 goaltenders on Frank Saravalli's trade bait board. They are Marc-Andre Fleury, Jonas Korpisalo, Alexander Gorgiev, Braden Holtby, and Anton Forsberg. I say 4 of them get moved. At least 4 of them get moved. Buy or sell on that, Jason?
Yeah, I will sell. I do want to say, I don't know if there's, who's ever the hype man of Jonas Korpisalo, that guy deserves a raise. This guy's been sub 900 and everybody's like, yeah, Jonas Korpisalo's the answer. I'm like, what question is he the answer to? I don't get it. So, but I'm going to sell. Gorgiev's the interesting one for me. Because he could be a longer term play, right? He's not just a rental guy, but I'm going to say, ultimately, I'll say 3.
I'll buy. I think all 5 move.
Whoa. Because, even Holtby.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. For exactly what you just said, Jay, this is an opportunity for non-playoff teams to get ahead of the goalie carousel. And especially for a pending unrestricted free agent like a Korpisalo. Korpisalo is walking no matter what. He's not coming back to Columbus. Even if it's a mid-round pick or a late-round pick, Columbus is better off moving him. So it's not going to be the acquisition price that holds a team back. And especially if that's the cost, you get him into your team and you throw him in the net for 12 games to close out the year. And if he's good and he's a fit, then you say, hey, I'm re-signing this guy. Other teams are looking for insurance. You know, Hopi could be a guy on a playoff team. Fleury could be a guy on a playoff team. Forsberg could be a guy that a team wants to get ahead of for next season. I don't see any reason why these guys don't all move. And by the way, on Korpisalo, why teams are interested is because he has had playoff success. He was really good against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they say, well, maybe this guy can do it again. And he's clearly been unhappy in his situation in Columbus. He's wanted to get out for a while now. Maybe it's just a change of scenery.
Yeah, fair enough. Right now, for my third one, let's go to a team that could potentially be in the goaltending market, and the Vegas Golden Knights. If you sort by points percentage, I mean, they're tied with Edmonton for the third spot in the Pacific Division. I'm going to say Vegas gets in, but they will not have home ice advantage in round one. Frank, you buying or selling?
Statistically, I'm selling. I still think they're the likeliest to finish second.
I'll buy that all day long. I think they're goaltending problems, and their schedule, they don't have a lot of home games down the stretch. So even though they haven't been that good at home, funny enough, but I will buy that they are not having home ice advantage.
Jay, I'm laughing after we just said all that. I may be Korpisalo's hype man. You're like, who is this guy? It might be me.
You might be. You don't even know. Yeah. You don't even know.
If you're looking for where to send the checks, Mr. Korpisalo, we will put Frank's mailing address in the description.
Out to Dr. Frank Saravalli.
All right.
Relative of Dr. Drake Ramore.
All right. Points bet bonus question. Our friends at Points Bet Canada, they are all in on the Brier. And why wouldn't they be? I mean, come on. Nothing says Canada like the Brier. Am I right, Greggs? It's down in Lethbridge, Alberta this year as well. Over on the Real Life podcast, we've been given away like all-inclusive weekends at the Brier. It's unbelievable. Anyways, Points Bet bonus question.
Who doesn't want an all-inclusive weekend in Lethbridge, Alberta?
Frank, have you ever been to a Brier patch?
No.
Oh, okay.
Unbelievable.
The Brier patch, Frank, is like, how would I explain it? It's basically just a free for all party. And the reason that the curling fans love it, it's so you imagine that you go and it would be hard. So let's say you're in the Stanley Cup playoffs and they were in the bubble in the round when you had all the teams there, and you would go into this big cabaret dinner. And all of a sudden you're at the bar, and right beside you, as you're a fan, is four of the players from your favorite NHL team. Because that's what the Brier patch is. The reason the curling fans love it is the curlers are in there, in a lot of cases, just tipping back the beers with the fans. And the people, it is an absolute gong show. If you like to socialize, you need to go to the Brier patch just once. That'd be my recommendation.
I would actually like that. But my thing is, I feel like watching curling live, it's a sport that's not nearly as good as it is on TV. Fair?
Oh, no, it's fair. You just sit in the crowd, Frank, and you can watch multiple games at once, right?
But
you watch multiple games at once. Right? Yeah.
But it's quiet and there's no like
atmosphere. Oh, no. They got the cowbells. The fans are, because they're cheering different shots at different times.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like it's like the NFL. It's better on TV than it is in person.
Anyways, the question we got here for the points bet bonus question. I love curling. I picked up curling in my last year of high school, and then I still curl once, sometimes twice a week now. What's one sport you wish you would have picked up earlier in life, Frank?
Golf.
But you're big into it now, right?
I am, but I started playing when I was like 8, and I stopped by the time I was 10. So I had enough fundamentals, but I went from 10 all the way till like 24 without playing at all. And that was a really long time to take off. And I wish, you know, I think it's one of those sports like learning a language, like you pick it up early, you have it for the rest of your life. And it's a very difficult sport to pick up later.
Without question, lacrosse. I did play-by-play in that sport for 12 years and fell in love with it. It'd be a great sport. And I think it really crosses over. It helps you footwork and hand coordination and how to absorb contact in a lot of other sports. So definitely lacrosse would have been that sport for me.
There you go.
Little known fact, I was a lacrosse player in high school.
You were a good hockey player too back in the day. You were an athlete. You were an all-around athlete, Frank.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe now looking at me.
All right. That's going to do it for another edition of Buy or Sell delivered by DoorDash.
I think on Fridays we should make it mandatory that it's Liam's ding dong, though. I think we have to put that because it's just like pause of Friday, man. It just gets you in the mood for the weekend. I want to get your thoughts quickly, Frank. We talked about Forsberg. What do you make of Ottawa? We haven't really talked about Ottawa and Pierre Dorion. What, you know, they're obviously out of it. What is he doing? What do you expect moves from him?
Well, they're trying to sign Nick Paul.
Yeah, they should.
And if they don't, they're going to have to trade him. They offered 3 years times $2 million and that didn't get it done. So then the question is kind of like the Tyler Motte situation in Vancouver. You've got this heart and soul player that everyone seems to like, but the offensive production isn't necessarily there all the time to warrant a significant cap hit. So how do you manage that? How does that work?
Yeah, because I agree with you. I think Ottawa, who's a team that's they've been in the, you know, in rebuild mode for a long time. And I think they're starting to come, they're at the cusp where they should be coming out of it. And Nick Paul's a player you really need. And like to lose him, if he wants, let's say he wants 2.4, right? And you offer two, I would bite the bullet and sign him for 3 years at 2.4.
But what if he's looking at it and he's saying, I want Sean Corrali money, 2.75 times four. I'm throwing a number out there because I think that's the same sort of general world that Tyler Motte is in and Van. And Van's problem is under Jim Benning, they committed too many dollars to players that aren't drivers or difference makers. I think in this case that Motte actually deserves that title because he does drive a line for them.
And he's a good penalty killer,
which they desperately need. Oh. But they've got other players, Jason Dickinson at 265, that's clogging things up.
Yeah. I think Ottawa, like sometimes, you know, you look and say, well, do we want to pay Nick Paul blank, right? And he wants 2.7. If he wanted two or you want to give him two and he really wants 2.7. That's a player I would go, Frank, for the 2.7 because I don't think it ends up being a massive overpay for you, right? Nick Paul, for what he does and the type of player he is, I think he's vital. They've got their top skill guys in Tkachuk and Norris. Right. And
they need Batherson, other pieces like Paul.
Stutzel. Yeah, he's exactly what a role player was, like a Yanni Gord and Coleman and those guys for Tampa. And you don't want to overpay to the like tune of $1 million or $2 million for a year. But if it's $700,000 for a guy who, because 2.7 is, you can live up to that contract, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think there's a chance that you can come in where people will say, "Hey, it's not a value deal," but he's living up to it. And I think Nick Paul is one of those players that's very important to Ottawa as they try to come out of the rebuild. And I think they'll regret it if they don't sign him. And unless he wants some ridiculous money, like it's 0.7 or something. Right. But if it's like $700,000, sometimes you have to bite the bullet on those guys. Cause I think they add to your team.
So it's not done. You asked what they'll do. Like they don't have really any choice if they feel like they're not going to get it done. He has real value. But the playoff team would be all over a guy like that to add to your mix. So
yeah,
that's really their big decision. They've got some RFAs. Like I think they want to try and I think they'd consider making a hockey trade. But, you know, Zach Sanford is another guy as a UFA. He could generate some interest. Other than that, like
Anton Forsberg.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they're probably trying to figure out how they can add to get these pieces in place for next season.
Frank, it's been an interesting one, man. We'll be 2 weeks away on Monday, and I think we might have a special guest. We're still waiting to confirm that, so I don't want to jinx it, but could have a big guest on Monday, and we're going to have a very unique story coming up next Friday on the pod in the hockey circles. And for our men listeners, and our women listeners who have men in their life, I think you'll want to listen to next Friday's pod.
How many women listeners do you think we have?
So, well, I do the numbers.
What is it?
It's 5%.
5%? Oh, it's better than I thought. I was going to say 0.3.
I don't know. There you go. Hey, well, you know what? We've had quite a few women guests on the show over the years, and we have more coming. And We'll get into that rivalry game in Pittsburgh that's coming up. I think that's going to be well attended, and you know, people like that. Like, good for the women who want to play that game. I think that, you know, they need a few more of those. And to me, it all comes down to, I saw, and before we leave, Frank, because we talked about it, you know, Chris Botta had reported that, you know, they're getting closer to having a one league for the women next year. And we've discussed this on the show. You know, every one of our lady guests agree, you get one league. I think the NHL wants to help out the one league.
Waiting for one league, yeah.
Yes, and they need it, and hopefully that comes to fruition, because that's the next step to take the women's game for them to grow, and that's going to help them at the Olympics, because you're going to have the best Finnish players and Swedish players and Russians and Czechs and all them playing in that league against the Americans and Canadians. That's how they'll get better. We've seen it in the NBA, right? Like,
I agree.
But the NBA, the United States demolished teams. It wasn't even close, the first dream team. And now you look at how those other countries, and it's, you know, there's lots of them playing in the NBA, and how much more competitive they are against the US now than they ever were before. And it takes time. People think this will be like a 5-year thing. No, it's going to take some time, but it's worked in the NBA, and I think it can work in the women's game, and hopefully they get that single league.
With all due respect, it's time for the PHF to step aside. Clearly the second tier of players, and they're the league that's in the way of the PWHPA of really making progress and headway.
Yeah. Agree. Look for the betterment of your sport.
Agreed.
Need to do it. Frank, have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.